Oh, you know how yesterday I was telling you about how the coronation is actually just the king swearing to the Church of England that he and all of his subjects will always be Protestant.
Yeah.
But there were people protesting.
But, oh, really?
So I always thought that all of Charles's hate came from, you know, Princess Diana, right? Mm-hmm. But it turns out a lot of Charles's hate apparently comes from how he has an opinion on architecture. Which, because of this documentary about Charles, it's literally just like royalty aren't supposed to have opinions because they're not elected officials. England is a republic, I'm guessing. I don't know. Like, they're not elected. There are actually elected officials who can have opinions on stuff. And the royals are just supposed to attend charities and shut the fuck up. And they were basically like, Queen Elizabeth was very, very good at doing that. So I guess everyone just loves her because she's quiet. Like, I thought we all liked her because she was a cute grandma. But apparently it's just because she doesn't talk. And Charles actually has opinions, which was very taboo. He advocated for climate change, which is great. Like, woohoo, Charles, they should have talked about that in Diana the Musical instead of the architecture shit. And there was this guy in the documentary, he's like a professor or a historian or like someone qualified, not a random person. He was like, I completely agreed with everything he had to say. I just didn't think he had the right to say it.
And now, some music from the Shucked Orchestra, conducted by Jason Allen, to start your morning class.
Welcome to Bottomless Broadway, where we talk musicals over mimosas. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Christine.
Today, we are going to talk about Shucked.
Yeah. Biggest surprise of the season.
It's also our second to last show that we're reviewing. So we just got Neil Diamond and then Tony nominations. And We've been waiting for a while to review this. We had so much to talk about right after seeing it. I feel like I forgot some of the best dialogue and I'm sad about it. But we really wanted to wait for the cast album because it feels like an important show. And we just want to have all the info.
And the album is truly better than I would have expected it to be. Did you have five words?
Do you want to start?
Sure. Mine are, they really yes-anded corn. And because, I mean, it was being branded as the corn musical. They were handing out popcorn. They had all these corn puns in all their ads. No one knew what the fuck this was going to be about, except for the people that I guess saw it in Utah. But we don't talk to those people, so we still had no clue what it was about. And they centered everything around corn. I mean, their first song is called Corn. Their act one closer is Corn Reprise. And there is a lot to do with corn, but they actually managed to make a whole show that has a full story, creates like pretty well fleshed out characters and like a whole community with, I guess, the premise of corn.
Corn is kind of there for the puns and everything, but you could have replaced corn with potatoes and we would have been fine. Yeah. Like there's a whole separate plot going on and it's like not dependent on corn, but the corn just makes it better.
Yeah, we saw all the ads and the subways and stuff, and they had all these puns in it. My favorite was the fake quote from the Game Hens chorus of New York City. It was just like, all right, if it's just puns alone, I need to see it for that. And then it ended up being like an actually good, well-written show.
While you were talking, I was considering two sets of five words. And so one of them is kind of related to this, which is lived up to the ads. And then the other one is like more about the show specifically. Bo is a dark horse. I guess much like the show. Show and Bo. Dark horse. Show and Bo, dark horse. Five words. I love Bo. I really did not care for him at first in the show because he seemed like an asshole. But once like we started learning about him, I was like, I love a good salt of the earth man who has great songs throughout the entire show.
We might as well jump into a summary then.
Basically, I don't actually know where they are. I thought for sure they were in Florida, but I don't know if they are in Florida or if she just traveled to Florida.
I think they purposely made it vague.
Right, because she's like, I traveled past Nashville and Atlanta. And I'm like, where the fuck are you, Texas? Which is very hard to get to as a pilgrim. They discovered the Midwest before the rest of the world did.
That's why they're like racially diverse pilgrims who never stole land from any indigenous people ever.
Right. So yeah, back during the Columbus-esque era, this group of pilgrims ended up somewhere in the deep south, southwest area. And they discovered corn through Native Americans and grew a fuck ton of them until they covered the land with a corn maze and shut out the outside world because they were like, those people are weird. We like it in here. We have corn walls that are like 100 feet deep. And they never left. And it's been hundreds of years later. And all this time, they basically fully survived on corn. And there's a whole song on all the things that you can do to corn. But suddenly, the corn like starts dying and they don't know what to do because it's literally their only source of survival. Our main character's name is Maisie. And she is engaged to this guy named Bo. And Bo is kind of this like young Adonis of the neighborhood. So when the corn starts dying, he's like, I'm going to figure it out. And Maisie's like, I'm going to head to the outside world and find someone who knows what they're doing. So she ends up in Tampa. And in Tampa, you know, she sees a lot of crazy Florida shit. And ultimately, she finds someone called a corn doctor. In the show, she's in this kind of red light district, seedy area of Tampa. So it's really a porn doctor, but she doesn't know that. She sees corn doctor. She's like, oh my God, there's literally a doctor for this. The doctor's name is Gordon, and he is actually a con man. He gets into some deep shit and owes a lot of money, but then he sees this piece of jewelry that Maisie wears, and it has a stone on it, which he believes to be really, really valuable. So he seduces slash tricks her into taking her back to her hometown where all the corn is so that he can go steal all of the precious stone that he saw. He's posing as still the corn doctor because he's like, wow, this bitch actually thinks that I can cure corn. So follows her home and the whole town is like, we don't trust this dude. But then slowly they kind of come around to him because he is a half adequate con man. And then at the end of Act One, he accidentally proposes to Maisie and Maisie says yes, mostly because she's having a big fight with Bo.
We can just stop there for the summary and then go through the rest of the show.
Yeah.
There's nothing like too shocking in the show, but if you really don't want to be spoiled, I'd say just stop around the act break.
There's actually nothing because in the opening, so there's two narrators in the show who like aren't part of the show, they're just comedic narrators, and in their opening number they literally say, oh, Maisie and Bo are writing vows for a marriage that almost didn't happen. So we actually know everything pretty much from the very beginning.
Speaking of the beginning, how did you like the opening number?
You know what, on stage I loved it. I felt like listening to it, it was weaker than I expected.
I think the intro to this song takes a while to like kick into the actual song, but once I actually make it past that part, I do like the main corn refrain. Mm-hmm. I do think that part is pretty catchy. I think one of the things that the show does well is it follows a very classic musical theater structure. Like your opening song introduces most of the characters, and then you have like an I Want song and you have conflict, and the first act closing song introduces a new conflict. So it makes you want to come back from intermission. And, you know, it has a very classical structure, even though they're just making corn and dead grandma jokes every other line.
The character songs do a great job of introducing and fleshing out the characters. But yeah, and the two narrators are Gray Henson and Ashley D. Kelly, and they just make a lot of jokes. There's like one where they're like, oh, these people are just like me and you. But then because Ashley is black, she's like, probably more like you. Yeah. And just other things like that in the intro. But what do you think about the use of narrators in this show?
I don't think it's necessary, but I liked it a lot because I felt like it kept it moving. And also, anytime Gray Henson had one of those, like the blank said to the blank, blank, there's one where he's like the lazy dentist said to the patient, brace yourself. But he's actually talking about like, you know, bracing yourself for the next part of the story. Like the personal trainer said to the lazy client, this is not working out.
Or there was one that ended with like, head over heels is just standing.
Yeah.
I really liked the narrators in the show. I thought they were really funny. Listening to the cast album, they don't stand out at all. Like, I don't feel like the cast album really does the narrators justice.
Yeah. I think they could have done a few. You know how some albums have different dialogue tracks in the middle?
Yeah.
I think they could have done with a couple of those. Yeah. And also because I feel like if you're just listening to the album, you wouldn't really be able to tell what the story is.
They say it came from Mexico some 7,000 years ago.
Somewhere between right now and dinosaurs. Roar.
Cut to the 1400s.
Christopher Columbus brought syphilis and smallpox to the shore.
And took credit for
corn. I'm talking corn. When it's popping up in rows, it's just like corn. And Rockwell had a fresh new canvas of a technicolor corn. It's Kentucky and it's Kansas, yeah, it's corn.
So the next song is Walls, which is Maisie's I Want song. And I would say there's four main characters in this show, but Maisie's definitely like number one. She's the one that wants to go into the outside world to find a cure. So the hook of the song Walls is I'm looking for a window, not a wall. And she just sings about her heritage and all the stubborn, hardworking, salt of the earth people in her family and how she feels like it's time to look outwards now. When we saw the show, I told you that I didn't like this song very much. Mm-hmm. I still don't. Okay, I have two reasons. So, like, number one, of the four main characters, this is Maisie's I Want song. And then I think each of the four main characters kind of have one technically because mm-hmm. Gordon, the con man, has bad. And then I would say that for Bo, it's Somebody Will. And for Lulu, it's Independently Owned. And I think this is by far the weakest one.
I would venture to say that this might be the weakest song in the show for me.
Oh, really? Okay. So my other reason is because I just think I needed a little bit more exposition because for the other characters' intro solos, there was more to like explaining why they wanted to do. Yeah, and then she just comes on really strong and she's like, you know what, this is my lineage, but I'm going to carry the world on my shoulders and look to the outside and solve this problem. And we're like, okay, but I don't actually, because like in every other way, she seems very normal. She's kind of like the belle of the town.
Classic ingenue.
Yeah, everyone really likes her. She and Bo's relationship is kind of the hot girl, hot guy relationship at a church youth group that everyone loves. From just looking at her, because we don't know anything about her yet, there's just no reason why she should be the person who's like, I'm going to look outside. I'm looking for a window, not a wall. And the song itself is kind of one note as well. It doesn't go anywhere. She just kind of talks about her lineage, talks about looking out over and over in every verse. Mm-hmm. So I was not impressed by this.
Yeah, I think it's also, and this also happens in Maybe Love too, where it's just staged a little boringly, where she is sort of alone on stage.
I feel ya. And then I believe between Walls and the Walls reprise, she gets into a fight with Bo, the one where he's like, I'm going to figure this out here, right here. And she's like, no, I don't trust you. I'm going to look for someone else.
Well, because she wants to leave the town. And they're like, oh my God, no one's left the town before. And he's like, if you don't trust me to fix this, and if you leave the town, like if you walk out of this place, we're over. Which is a little bit of a dick move, but you know.
Yeah, like I hated Bo at this point. Yeah. He came back so strong. But at this point, I was like, what a sexist asshole.
Yeah.
We only see the danger in places we ain't been. We never think a stranger could ever be a friend. But every friend you got is someone that you didn't used to know. So I built walls around our homes, around our hearts. We just stay small, always thinking we're so smart. But that story's gotta end though, or we could lose it all. So I'm looking for a window, not a wall.
And then we get to Travelin' Song, which I actually think is more delightful than I expected, because it's kind of two songs in one.
Yeah.
The first half is the storytellers telling you this like very complicated way of like how you need to leave the town, because I guess the town is so isolated that you gotta like do a bunch of shit just to leave. It's like making it out of downtown LA when it's traffic.
I'm literally shocked that there is a way. Like when she was singing, I'm looking for a window, not a wall. I thought that she was just going to hack her way through 100 feet of corn, like make a little tunnel or a window, so to say, and crawl the fuck out of there. Because I was like, they've made it very clear in the opening number that there's no way out. But apparently you can take a truck to a rock, to a duck, to a dock, to a boat that'll float, to a donkey, to a horse to get out.
And then they finally mentioned an Uber and I'm like, oh my God, they're in the 21st century.
I like the part where they're naming all of the animals and then they say greyhound dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's maybe a dog, maybe a bus, but we're getting somewhere. Yeah. She took a plane.
Yeah, she took a Southwest
plane. This girl that has never left home, literally exhausted every form of transportation, like, known to man. Like,
she's like, if I'm leaving the town, I'm leaving the town.
And she ends up in Tampa.
I thought they chose Tampa so that it would rhyme with things. But then I was reading an interview with the songwriters, and they're like, yeah, we really wrote ourselves into a corner a few times. Like, we just have to keep finding rhymes for Tampa and corn, and it was a struggle.
There was a line in another song about how you go to Tampa if you can't afford Orlando, so I assume it's, you know, several steps below Miami, so maybe they're just looking for the trashiest place.
That's true. They do spend a good amount of time describing how trashy it is.
They're like, book a return, 30 taken.
But yeah, so this is just her discovering the world outside. She finds Gordy's sign at the end. It is a fun song.
She makes me want to be a cliche tourist because when she arrives in Tampa, she like runs up on stage and she's literally got like, I don't know, like a popcorn and a slushie and a waffle cone and tourist sunglasses and just like a light up stick. I don't know, like fucking everything, which is like super touristy, but she just looks like she's having the time of her life. I'm like,
you know what this actually
that.
Reminds me of is mm-hmm. West Covina, you know, when she shows up and she has the giant pretzel
yeah.
and there's like that anime girl. That is this.
Yeah.
It's a skip, then a frog, on a log to a greyhound dog, then a bus to a bus, and you might need to rush to an Uber to a train. Got a ticket with your name, and we just touched down on a Southwest plane.
The next song is Bad, which introduces us to Gordy. I did not really like this song in the show. I felt like it was trying to be funnier than it actually was. And it felt a little bit like a more upbeat slash positive version of the dentist song from Little Shop of Horrors. Because mm-hmm. basically Gordy is a con man, but he's a bad con man. And his family is a bunch of con people too. And he's sort of like the runt of the litter because he's bad at being a con man because he robbed a bank that had already been robbed. It's like funny, but it's not funny. But I did like it a lot better on the album. I think it has a little bit of a groove to it.
Yeah, I don't remember it a ton in the show either, but listening to it, I think it's a good song to introduce Gordy with. I think it makes him a little more sympathetic because you know that he's the rut and he's like not really bad to the bone, but just like that's what he grew up with, so he thinks that he has to be a hustler.
Oh yeah, the other thing is he's in debt. He's like borrowed money from a gangster or something and they're like shaking him up, and that's why he needs these rocks so badly, is because he's scared of this gangster whose name is Big Willie, by the way.
And Maisie's wearing, what is it, like a bracelet?
It's a bracelet that her grandfather made her from the rocks that are like underneath their house to remind her of home.
Yeah, and he goes to like a pawn shop or something and gets it checked out and they're like, yeah, this stone is very precious. And then Maisie's like, yeah, we have like a million of them back home.
Yeah.
How does he get her to take him home? Is it just by saying that he can save the corn, or do they accidentally kiss or something?
Both. There's a scene with them like on the beach or something, and he's very complimentary toward her. He's like, have I told you that you're the prettiest girl I've seen today? And like, He's like, wow, you must be so brave to leave home. And it's obviously very much in juxtaposition to Bo, who was like, you can't leave. I don't think you could do it. You know, so she is feeling much more appreciated. And then she accidentally kisses him. Then she's just like, yeah, I guess I got to bring this guy back.
And then she does in Woman of the World.
Which I think this is the best Maisie solo.
How many does she have?
I think it's just this, Walls, right? And maybe Love.
Yeah, I guess I agree, but I don't love this either. Like, I do like Maisie as a character, but I just feel like her songs are a little weak.
I am actually, like, pretty into this song. Okay. It's also just, like, funny in a little bit of an ironic way, and I don't know if that is supposed to be purposeful, but she's basically like, look, I left town, I went all the way to Tampa, and I'm bringing a guy back. I'm a woman of the world. I think it's also probably her most dynamic solo in the show, because she's walking up the stairs, walking down the stairs, she disappears off stage, and then she comes back in riding a wagon.
They thought they knew everything about me.
The rest of her town, people are like varying levels of skeptic, but most people are happy that she is home. But obviously at one extreme end of the spectrum is Bo. He's like, I know Korn. This guy doesn't know Korn, which of course just makes Maisie madder at him.
And is also true.
And then he sings Somebody Will, which between the four main character intro songs of Walls, Bad, Somebody Will, and Independently Owned, Somebody Will is actually my favorite.
I might agree. It's pretty close to Independently Owned for me, and for different reasons too. I think this is a better song, but the performance for Independently Owned just like puts it up a notch, you know?
It was very good. It's also something that we've seen before, like a strong Black woman belting a power ballad. And yeah. Somebody Will, I think we don't see songs like this from guys often.
That's like, true, yeah.
This idea of if you don't love me, somebody will isn't really something that we see from male characters that often. Andrew Duran, he does a really good job. It's a little emotional, not like cry emotional, this, but like yeah. I really feel for him.
This definitely made me more interested in Bo as a character because, you know, it seems like a classic. Oh, he's just like closed-minded. He's too proud to admit that. Like, he needs help with the corn because he doesn't know how to fix it, you know. But this one actually made me like him more.
And exactly.
Yeah, and I think it is a really good performance. And it's just a good song to listen to. Just to talk about the songwriters a little bit. They're Brandi Clark and Shane McAnally. And they are legit country songwriters. Like, they've written for Kacey Musgraves and Luke Bryan, I think. And so they know how to write country songs. And this, I think, is a good, like, country Broadway song that could probably work on pop radio, honestly.
Yeah.
It's just because he's like, listen, there's nothing wrong about me. Like, I have manners. I believe in chivalry. I'm a gentleman. It's fine. She doesn't like me. Like, I'll figure it out. I still got chances. And it's like a nice little uplifting song because he doesn't just like turn into an incel, or like he doesn't get super. I mean, he's obviously mad about it, but it's not like a I'm going to get revenge kind of mad.
Yeah. So as you were saying, when Maisie and Bo first fight, we're like, oh, like he's kind of sexist. He doesn't seem to respect her the way that you would want your fiance to respect you. And I feel like this song is great because it doesn't completely refute that. He still is this farmer boy, but you just understand his perspective a bit more and realize that he's not a total asshole. It's not that he doesn't think Maisie is smart so much as he just kind of doesn't really care about the outside world. And I just think there's something really endearing about his character because he admits to things. He's just like, you know what? I might not be all that. I might not be from the big city like Gordon, but my fields are taken care of. My dogs are taken care of. I have good manners. I do all the shit that I was taught to do. So like, if she doesn't like me, somebody will. And I think it's an endearing character development.
Yeah, the show did keep you guessing a little bit about their relationship because Maisie's moved on to Gordy, who she's kissed. Their relationship is unclear, but you know, if you watch The Music Man, you know how that ends. Bo is like, well, I'll just move on. It's fine. At the same time, all of their friends, well, mostly family members, Lulu being Maisie's cousin and Peanut being Bo's brother, are like, oh, but you're made for each other. You know, you two have been in love since you were children. So the show does sort of like keep that in limbo where it never feels completely like their relationship is over, but it also feels like there's a little bit of work to be done before they get back together.
The only reason that I kind of doubted Bo and Maisie is because the playbill, like the show itself, said that they were inspired by Music Man. But I think like Gordy's character is not really like Harold Hill at all. I mean, maybe it's because Hugh Jackman has a great ass, but like Gordy is not half as endearing or charismatic as Harold Hill, in my opinion. And he cannot pull off pastel pants like Harold Hill. And listen, Hugh Jackman in those white slacks, amazing.
The true mark of a man. I don't think you're wrong. Yeah, I didn't think she would like end up with Gordy, but I thought there was possible she would pull like a, well, I need to go see more of the world before I settle down sort of thing, you know?
I see, yeah.
Well, I'm pretty good looking if you look around here. I can skin a buck and never spill my beer. I'll pay for dinner and I'll open up the door. Manners like that don't matter no more. I'm an old-fashioned guy in an old-fashioned world. Up until now, I had an old-fashioned girl. I'm a damn good don't want me well. Somebody well. Yeah.
Then we meet Lulu for mostly the first time. She is the whiskey distiller of this town. I don't know if I've ever had corn whiskey, but apparently that's a big thing here.
Apparently it's very close to moonshine. So it's like barely whiskey. Yeah, it's like 160 proof.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because they get really hammered later.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild because like it's a somewhat sizable town. I mean, we only see family members, so I guess we don't know. But
it's a sizable enough town where they've been able to keep the population at least stable for however many years they've been there, you know?
Hundreds, yeah.
So they haven't been fucking their siblings yet.
And, well, we don't know that, but
true.
Everybody is growing corn. Like, that is the only thing you can do in this town. And for some reason, there is only one person making whiskey out of it, and that's Lulu. I know that they tell us there's a lot to do with corn, but it's still wild that there's one distillery and everyone else is finding something else to do with corn. So, Lulu song. Independently owned.
This is when she meets Gordy also, because Gordy is like, wow, you run this all by yourself? Like, have you ever thought about finding a man? Which, of course, Lulu is just kind of offended by. She's like, nope, this operation is independently owned, and so am I, essentially.
Doesn't Gordon kind of ask it because he's like immediately attracted to her?
Yeah.
So he's just kind of like, do you have a man?
I think this is also a pretty good song. And of course, like Alex Newell as Lulu just brings the house down.
Right. It's like a feminist power ballad. Everyone's excited.
Yeah.
You know how during our last episode for New York, New York, I was like, oh, I'm one of the smart ones is a very boring feminist song because I think compared to this one, like anyone could have sang I'm one of the smart ones. Like it doesn't really have anything specific to the character. And this one, like it does, it's not doing the most in terms of like uniqueness. But the fact that it's like, I'm independently owned and operated, the only thing here that's incorporated, et cetera, is very like specific to her distillery.
Yeah.
So it's a great feminist power ballad, but it also does introduce and tell us a good bit about Lulu.
Yeah. Apparently the day after the Tony nominations were announced, in which Alex Newell received a nomination, there's a list of words at the end where it's like liberated, calculated, educated, underrated, and they added nominated to that list or something. So I feel like that would have been so cool to watch.
In the performance?
Yeah, like on like the next night's performance.
That's really cool.
Somebody Will is definitely also standing ovation worthy in terms of the performance, but the song just itself doesn't sort of lean into that vibe as much. So no one really stands for Bo. Poor Bo.
Back-to-back power ballads. Really really. Great part of the show.
I'm independently owned and complicated. And no, I don't need a man to feel emancipated. The boys around here sure ain't much help. This corn ain't gonna shuck itself. There might be someone that I ain't met yet. And no disrespect to Miss Tammy Wynette. I can't stand by my man. He'll have to stand by me.
Then so Gordy's like, all right, cool, not messing with Lulu, I guess, but he's still definitely attracted to her. And he gets a call on his phone, and because he's surrounded by like 100 feet tall corn, his service is really bad. But it's the gangsters calling him to be like, hey, Big Willie got whacked, you're fine because now he's dead, he can't collect on his debt, so don't worry about it. But he can't hear it correctly, so he thinks Big Willie is after him even more. He's like, oh, I'm gonna get whacked by Big Willie. And then in the middle of this call, he gets another call from the jewelry appraisers, who are like, hey, we looked at the wrong
separate phone.
Yeah, on a separate phone, on a second phone. He has two phones now. And they're like, hey, the pages stuck together. We were actually looking at the wrong rock. The rock that you showed us is worthless. He doesn't hear any of that. He thinks that it'll be worth a ton. He needs to get these rocks. It's actually a pretty fun book scene. Like, the audience applauds after this whole thing because it's just like very manic, and like the switching between them is very fast. Right after this, who starts off holy shit?
Peanut. The brother
does. Yeah, so Peanut starts off holy shit, and he is definitely hidden in the bushes, and he's like, oh my god, did you hear that? Why does he have two phones? He said something about whacking his willy, his really big willy.
So he hears the sketchy calls, but he's way off base.
Yeah.
So the smarter people come in next.
Bo comes in. He's also dressed up as like a scarecrow because these people are terrible at camouflage, but apparently good enough to fool Gordy because, again, he's a bad criminal. And he's like, wow, like, you heard that too? There's no way that a good guy has two different phones.
I thought Lulu said that. Lulu, a one-woman man don't need two phones, which really makes me wonder, like, what history Lulu has. There's only so many men in this corn maze. Who the fuck is cheating on her with multiple phones? It really feels like Lulu has left the corn maze, even though nobody has left the corn maze.
She has secretly left the corn maze.
They don't really piece it together, but they're just like, he is not honest.
And you get like a little bit of a reprise from Tampa. They're like, I don't know, but something smells like Tampa, something fishy just south of Savannah. But yeah, so all three of them are very suspicious. Oh, also, we haven't talked about Peanut. Peanut is wild. I guess he's a very shower thoughts kind of person. So they'll be like, don't you think that's kind of weird? And Peanut will be like, you know what I think? If you have enough time to push someone out of the way of the bullet, they have enough time to move. And he'll just go off on this tangent of like basically random shower thoughts. And they're just so out of nowhere that you're just like, what the fuck? Where did this come from? But his delivery of it is just so good. I mean, he got a Tony nomination for this, which I was a little surprised by. I was like, I did not think that role was big enough to get a Tony nomination.
There's this part where Bo confronts Gordy, and Gordon's like, why don't you trust me? Bo's like, I only trust two things, myself and God. And then he's like, also my mama. Myself, God, and my mama. Three things. And then he's like, nope, four things. Myself, God, my mama, and my brother. And he's like, nope, five things. Myself, God, my mama, my brother, and my dog. And I was like, the way that Peanut's going, you should probably trust your dog before your brother. But
yeah, I mean, we haven't really got a chance to talk about that much in the book yet. And I feel like we you know, it's boring if we just list the jokes also, because they're just a lot funnier in context. But the book is really just like so many jokes. They actually tried it as like a one-act version. And what they realized was that the audience did get tired of laughing after like the first half or so. So they're like, okay, this does need an intermission so the audience can basically reset to be able to laugh again or
relax your abs.
Yeah. But yeah, so Holy Shit ends a little abruptly because Maisie comes onto the scene and basically chastises them for judging Gordy. Maisie's like, what if I do love him? And they're all like, you dumb bitch, you don't. But then she sings Maybe Love on an empty stage, which is kind of boring. So my issue with Maybe Love, I actually like the melody of this song, but I think this solo version of the song is like the worst version of the song, because it comes in the opening number, it comes in the closing number, and there's also like an extra version on the album, which is the two songwriters singing it as a duet. And I like that version better than this also.
The closing number is definitely better. Listening to it, I still don't like it. But when I was watching the show, I wasn't like as repulsed.
I mean, the actress that plays Maisie, Caroline Innerbickler, I don't think it's her fault that this one solo version of the song is just not as exciting. But it just
is not
as exciting.
The actor. But like, I don't think the song goes anywhere. And also the punchline of the song, I guess, is Maybe Love Just Needs a Little Love.
Which
and
I don't understand.
The song, good or bad, like I have no feelings about it when she's basically singing it about Gordy at this point in the show. No one believes in the romance between her and Gordy.
I mean, I agree that that part of the song like structurally doesn't work. And also because it's another song where she's just alone on stage. So she's not really doing anything interesting. It's not like you see her approaching Gordy or anything.
Gordy gives her so little.
I think also part of it is just she's still in a fight with Beau. So she wants to basically say anything that will get back at him. And she's like, what if I am in love with Gordy? You know?
Right.
And she also just is tired of being talked down to by them, because all of them, except maybe Peanut, are like objectively a little more worldwise than her.
It would have been better if she were more confrontational like that. But instead, yeah, it reads like a very straightforward, I'm in love ballad.
It's a very ingenue song.
Yeah, but you know what? This just unlocked something in my mind. Like another Korn song. Remember Love Kernels?
Oh my God.
Because I was just talking about, I was like, Gordy's giving her nothing. And I was like, oh my God, Love Kernels.
Just like Josh Chan.
Something about corn. It's a little phallic and apparently represents a lot of song.
Maybe he is meant to last. Maybe Beau is just my past and the reason I left home was more than just to fix the corn. Maybe love is like a seed, a little sun is all it needs, a little rain and so it goes, it grows and grows and grows and grows from dust. Maybe love just needs a little love.
Corn reprise. I feel like calling it a reprise is doing it a little bit of injustice, because it's like a whole ass song.
I don't know if it's a reprise or if they were just like, we want to call another song Corn. We know we called a song Corn already, but we want to call another song Corn too.
But this is probably the most Music Man one. Gordy has a patter song where he convinces everyone he fixed the corn. He like parts the branches of the corn stalks to show a perfectly grown corn. And he's talking like fairly fast and everyone's just like, what are you talking about? And he's like, never mind, just move the rocks. He makes up a bunch of shit. He's like, the rocks are sucking up all the water out of the soil. That's why the corn is dying. You gotta move the rocks. We also get little snippets from Beau and Lulu. They're like arguing and Gordy is digging up one of the rocks so that he can demonstrate, I guess, how to move a rock. He's kneeling on the ground and he's holding up a rock to like show people, but it just so happens Maisie's standing in front of him and she's like, oh my God, Gordy, yes, I will marry you. And he's like, wait, what? And everybody is like, what the fuck?
It's not even a ring, right? It's just a rock.
Maybe that's how they propose. I mean, their jewelry is just the rock.
It's like, this is like everyone else's engagement ring that I know of. Yeah, I mean, I think it helps because the narrators come in and they're like, and this is where Maisie kind of lost the plot. You prepped us, we're ready.
Yeah, so I think classic act one finale.
The corn's in trouble, so let's troubleshoot. Like any other problem, the problem's at the root. And the roots ain't rooting because the soil ain't soaking. And the soil ain't soaking because the rocks are sucking all the water from the soil. All the water from the stalks. Want to fix your corn, you got to start with the rocks.
What's he saying?
The rocks got to go. Move those rocks and your corn will grow.
Oh, move those rocks. And the corn will grow! Whoa!
Well, holy shit!
Holy shit!
That's a lot!
Who'd have thought?
All they gotta do is move those rocks!
Act two.
It's honestly like a traditional but very good first song after intermission.
Yeah, we love Jesus, but we drink a little. But I was looking at the lyrics and I was like, wait, this is like surprisingly funny where they're like, we go to church on Sunday twice and even on a Wednesday night. So our chances into the pearly gates are triple. That leaves us 5 whole days of sin, all kinds of crazy to get in. Yeah, we love Jesus, but we drink a little.
I definitely like he turned water into wine. We turned corn into shine, especially now that we know it's 160 proof.
And then we get another Bo song, which I had totally forgotten about this song.
It's not bad, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Bo's songs Bo are all dark horses. Yeah. Like, they are good. I mean, I know Best Man Wins isn't a solo, but love it. And then I do, like, his parts are kind of my favorite. It's kind of like Aunt Deborah and Kimberly. But, like, after the fact, I'm like, damn, those were some good songs.
He really elevates this song. So I feel like I like the performance of the song more than I like the song itself.
So I think, in a way, the song isn't needed. Everything he says, we kind of already know. He's just, you know, sad that Maisie has moved on and is literally marrying Gordy now. Although it doesn't really tell us anything new about how he's feeling, the way that it's written and the words and like the language that he's using is still kind of like unique to Bo and helps you empathize with him a bit more, because we already know from earlier in the show and his first solo that like he is the tough, hardworking man. Just him being on stage and being like, hey, I'll be okay. It's not a big deal. First love doesn't work out anyway. It's like borderline toxic masculinity, but then like because you know the character, it's just like, oh, poor dude. Like he's just holding it in. Yeah. And it's like, it's accurate, I think, to like his characterization.
Yeah. Also, I guess like it feels like a weird song to have because he's not the main character.
Like Maisie doesn't actually have a ton more stage time than anyone else. That's what I was kind of like alluding to earlier when I was like, there's sort of four I want songs, yeah. Like not really, but each main character technically gets one. So like in a way, this is very traditional musical theater, but like in another way, it kind of deviates from that. But they managed to do all of that and give each character an I want song and wrap that shit up with like 20 tracks. So I love that. I love when a show has like 16 tracks, 20 tracks. These days, everybody be thinking they're Hamilton and they can just like throw 50 tracks and I want to listen to all of them and I don't.
Oh my God. New York, New York announced their cast album 29.
Yeah, Bad Cinderella UK version has 38, Jesus which is Christ. Too many.
Economical storytelling. It's always great. I mean, yeah. I guess the thing is that in the show, I liked some of the songs in this show, but I didn't love them as much as I do now after listening to them. And, you know, part of it is just getting a chance to listen to them. But when you're watching the show, the book is just so joke dense that the book is like what gets the most attention. You're like, oh my God, that was so well written because there were so many jokes. I was laughing so much. And it's still a good plot for the most part. So the songs actually kind of don't matter in that sense. And then it's just once you go back to it later, you're like, wait, these songs are actually pretty good. So
yeah, I was expecting the score to be more forgettable, like more of a Some Like It Hot situation. There were definitely individual songs that stuck out to me, but like the ones that I didn't remember, I didn't expect them to be good. But they are.
Yeah.
I never thought she'd give her heart to anyone but me. No, I never thought a world apart is where I'd turn out to be. And I want her to be happy, so I'll pretend to be. And if she's ever ask me, I'll just make believe.
Maisie kind of pulls a dick move, and she's trying to write vows for her wedding with Gordy, realizes finally that she knows nothing about Gordy. And when Maisie and Beau's wedding was interrupted, Beau managed to get through his wedding vows before they stopped to go figure out the corn situation.
Oh my God, I can't believe we didn't talk about that specifically. It's literally like the wedding of the generation. And then they're like, stop the wedding, the corn's dying.
But yeah, so she goes to Beau, again, kind of a dick move. And she's like, hey, I need some help writing vows. And Beau, understandably, is like, you want me to help you write vows to another man? I don't understand why he agrees to do it. I guess because he still is in love with her. Oh, and also Maisie is fighting with Lulu because, you know, Lulu didn't believe in her, still thinks something is fishy with Gordy. And then Maisie said her whiskey was sour and it was like huge gasps. so they're not talking right now. And that's why she doesn't go to Lulu for help. But then Gordy approaches Lulu because he's like, I know you're her oldest friend and I need help. Like, what does she like? So there are two separate pairings here. And they sing I Do, which is a weird song for me because I do think it's actually the most beautiful song in the show. I think it's a great song. But the fact that these pairings are a little bit mismatched in how much they're sort of trying to help them write for people that they're obviously not suited for, like, it just feels like a little bit of a disconnect for me.
I mean, it's called I Do, and I guess sort of spoiler alert, the two separate pairs that you described end up together at the end of the show, obviously instead of Maisie and Gordon. So I think they're just like amping up the romance for each couple on opposite sides of the stage. I think we're supposed to infer that Maisie still reaches out to Beau for help to write vows, even though it's kind of fucked up, but it's because like she trusts him and, you know, treats him as a confidant, and Beau agrees to help because like he's still in love with her and just wants to get an opportunity to like spend time with her. Over the course of this song, it convinces you more and more that like, oh yeah, for sure, these are the end pairing.
I felt like there should have been more anger on Beau's part towards Maisie. And Lulu still doesn't trust Gordy. And I feel like they kind of threw that out the window a little for this song.
Maybe that's what okay is. Like, okay is Beau being like, I'm going to put it all behind me. I'm fine. I'm going to just fake it. So when Maisie hits him up for those vows, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll help you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I just feel like the character beats fell a little short for me here. Again, really love the song, though.
And the whole time, like, the couples are just getting closer. Gordy's reciting what he's going to do at the wedding. He's like, maybe I should take her hand. But it's clear that, like, he's singing it to Lulu, and Lulu's, like, kind of seduced, but also trying to keep it PG because that's her best friend's fiance.
Right.
And then the same thing's going with Maisie. She's like, maybe we should get real close, etc. And it's clear that, like, you know, they kind of talk about how, like, she found writing vows to Beau really easy because she actually loves him, whereas for Gordy, she has nothing. And then, so one of my favorite parts is Lulu recommends a line for Gordy's vows, like, you can tell her that your eyes will never stray. And Gordy's like, well, sometimes it's hard to look away. And he's like looking at Lulu. And then on the other side of the stage, Maisie says, I'll swear to him my loyalty. And then Beau says, kind of like you did with me. And I was like, yes. Beau is everything in this song. I also like the line where Maisie's talking about Gordon and she's like, he'll be my last love. And Beau's like, well, he can't be your first.
Maisie kisses Beau at the end of the song and Beau's just like, what the actual fuck? He's like, I thought I was done with this. And there it is again.
I can't, they can't, I will, they will. I'll love you until the cows come home and
the moon stops glowing.
Be able to be faithful and true.
Friends is okay. It's like a lesser for good.
I think it is also another one where it's like a good song, but more of like a generic song.
I'm legit mainly just here for songs where Bo has a part in them.
Like, I mean, it's sweet. It's Maisie and Lulu making up, and they're like, well, we have always been family, but we'll be friends forever, which, I mean, you know, doesn't really track.
Or like, but the hook is like, I have to call you family, but I get to call you friend.
Oh, yeah. Which that one is better.
It's sweet.
But it's just not that interesting. Yeah. Especially compared to the next song, which is Best Man Wins.
Also, Peanut sings again. He's only in like two songs, but he's such a treat.
Yeah. Peanut again is trying to convince Bo to like really go after Maisie, especially once Bo mentioned that Maisie kissed him again. This song
Peanut is Tommy Caggiano from New York, New York.
He is. I was gonna say, he shows up twice, this song is amazing. A steel beam song in New York, New York. Like, it kind of goes off the rails in terms of it starts somewhere and then you really don't need the rest of the song for the for the plot.
But it's still
good. But it's so fun.
I mean, lyrically, I think this is a better song, but Peanut is like, Peanut and Tommy, like, they show up barely at all. Whenever they're there, it's the highlight of the show, and they're the good friends that get you back with the woman that you don't deserve, or in this case that you're probably too good for, but it's fine.
I mean, I totally thought the song was going to be called Hee Haw. Quick backstory, this this musical way long ago, like 10 years ago, was based off of a variety show called Hee Haw, which I meant to watch or meant to see if there was like any clips of before we taped, and then I didn't, so never mind. But that show did not get great reviews. So then they sort of like forgot about it. And then Robert Horne won the Tony for Tootsie. All of a sudden, everybody was like, oh my God, what's he going to do next? And he was like, oh, well, I got this sitting in my pocket. But they do say hee haw a lot, like a lot.
They go off the rails for, I guess, metaphors of like, there being
oh,
two men in one.
Oh my God, they're so bad, like purposefully.
And actually, is Bo also the best man in the wedding?
Yeah.
Or so that's great because it's like, may the best man win, but it's may the best man win.
Yeah. The most questionable one was there's two triggers, just one gun. I was like, does that even make sense?
It starts off like totally sensible. There's two roosters, just one hen. Makes complete sense. Very yeah. farmy, but we get it.
Yeah, I also like the line that they sing between it, which is, it's time to let the moonshine shed a little light, because they're planning mm-hmm. on getting him drunk.
And then don't they end with, like, there's two horses, just one ass?
Yeah.
Also questionable. Where? There's another questionable
song. There's two hot dogs,
like
just one bun.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
It's such a greatly staged scene. Like, there's not a ton of choreography in the show overall, but they spent like 80% of their choreography effort on this song. All these barrels, and they do this thing where they put a plank on the barrels and they both like roll it across, but then also they use it a little bit as like a seesaw sort of thing. And then they just like jump on top of the barrels, and it gave me so much anxiety because I was like, one of them's gonna miss and one of them's gonna fall, but then none of them fall. And you're just like, oh my God, they're so good at jumping.
He ain't from where we come from. We may talk slow, but we ain't dumb. He thinks we're all just country hicks. He double dare these derelicts. Yee-haw!
Even a wolf in sheep's disguise won't pull the wool over our eyes. He's a dry martini sipper, but we hold our women like we hold our liquor.
He may have fixed the con,
but he ain't fooling us. It's time to pay the fiddler, hey, enough is enough. Woo!
Hee-haw, hee-haw,
there's two roosters,
just one hen.
Hee-haw, hee-haw,
it's a fight to the finish, may the best man win.
Maisie kind of formulates the same plan with her girls and bridesmaids. She's having doubts.
Also, because I think she found out that Lulu liked Gordy, right? Her plan was also just get him super fucking drunk and basically like dump him so that he'll run to Lulu for comfort or something like that.
Two groups, one plan, get him drunk. But the men show up first. So
yeah.
They get to Gordy first. They're like, yo, like, let's stag party it up. Gordon's like, yes, I need this drink because yesterday I didn't know I was getting married. And so they get together and they do corn mix, which...
I had totally forgotten about this until really? I saw the show again. Like, I remembered the scene, but I forgot that it was just like a reprises of every single song.
Yeah. So basically the two narrators are like, let's speed through this a little. But then, like, it's not really sped through that much. Like, you think it's going to be like at 8 p.m., this is what they were like. At 10 p.m., this is how they were like. At 1 a.m., they're hammered. But it's like at 8:05, this. At 8:07, this. 8:13, this. Literally, like, half an hour by 8:30, they are all drunk karaokeing together like they've been best friends forever.
It's so good. I do like in the beginning, Bo is like, maybe we should just start you off with a child's portion. And Gordy, who, you know, is like, no. Like, he's like, where I come from, we have spirits named specifically for the tough urbanite who navigates a daily concrete battleground. Perhaps you've heard of something called a cosmopolitan.
Oh, from a Cosmo to 160 proof whiskey.
Yeah.
What I really love in this song is, like, you feel kind of bad for Gordy because all the guys, you know, the guys are tricking him, but they're like, yeah, man, like, welcome to the family. We want to be your groomsmen. Like, let's party it up. And Gordon's just like, I've never had friends before. And they're like, oh, well, we're your friends, even though, like, they're lying to him. But he's just, like, so genuinely grateful. And then he says this line where he was like, yeah, my childhood was just really hard because my parents moved around a lot. I mean, yeah, I always found them again. And I'm just like, oh my god, poor Gordy.
Oh man, that was such a good line.
Like you were saying, basically whenever the narrators are like, now it's 8:10, now it's 8:13, they say that and then it cuts to the story, and then all the drunk guys are singing one reprise or another, or like an excerpt of each of the songs earlier in the show. And I think when you're in the show, like, if you haven't heard the songs before, like, they're all so new to you that you don't really realize it, at least the first time that you're watching it. But when I listen to it, like, it makes me so happy. It's kind of like in Come From Away when they suddenly start singing Titanic, because it's like, at this point, I'm familiar with all the songs that they're sampling. So I'm just like, oh my god, it's that song.
Also, some of them are, like, pretty smart intros into the song, because after Gordy takes his first shot, he's like, oh my god, what is in this? And they're like, well, corn. And then they start singing a piece of corn, and I was like, wow, that was pretty smart. No, the best one was like the Friends type, where they're like, we'll be your friend, and then they start singing Friends, but because they're like drunk off their asses, they forget the lyrics, so they're like, something something together. Like, it's truly like a very realistic depiction of what it's like to drink with a bunch of people and then try to drunk karaoke with them.
And then at 8:30 specifically, they randomly start doing Somebody Will, but there is like no lead in. Like, there's no explanation into why.
And then at 8:45, the women show up and they sing Woman of the World, and they're like, oh my god, are you trying to get him drunk? And Gordy's like, hey, I'm not okay. It's like the last reprise. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nice because I feel like you do, even though they're tricking him, they do kind of become friends. Like, I believe that they genuinely became friends with that. Like, you don't just drunk karaoke your own song with anybody.
Also, like, none of the other guys were smart enough to, like, spit out their liquor. Like, yeah. They're all got hammered together. It's like, was this the plan? Because I don't think that worked.
Yeah.
Around 8:15, go!
Tell us about where you're from. Tampa, if you can't afford Orlando or Atlanta. Medicare, Metamucil, and Mylanta. Will always feel like home to me in Tampa.
Stop! By 8:30, go!
Yeah, Gordy! Hey, this is my song, I love it!
Somebody will!
Stop! 8:32!
I mean, it goes pretty abruptly in the cast album, but basically Gordy feels really bad about everything. I don't even remember if he actually finds out he doesn't owe a bunch of money, but he was like, I came here looking for money and for people to trick, but I really should have come looking for family. And it's like very cheesy, but also very heartfelt. And he's like, I just wanted a family like this. And they all like decide to accept him. He's like, yeah, I was a fake the whole time. I just needed these rocks. I was making it up. Except then, like, because they had already moved some of the rocks, they find out that the soil where they removed the rocks is actually moist again. And then the corn is
the
like,
rocks were soaking up all the water.
So he was like actually right about this random bullshit he made up. And then Lulu like decides to give him a chance. So then they get together and Maisie's like, oh my God, Gordy actually did it. And Bo is like, no, Maisie, you did it. You had the courage to like go out there and try to find us a solution. And then Maisie's like, oh my God, you finally believe in me. And then they like get back together and they sing Maybe Love, which is probably the best version of Maybe Love in this show.
Maybe love
is like a farm,
is like a town,
keeps you fed,
it keeps you safe.
Keeps you sound,
might get frozen in the frost, but maybe love is never lost. Maybe love is like a sea, a little shine is all it
needs. Honestly, this is a great show. I think this is definitely my favorite album that came out of all the new shows. I don't know. It's pretty close to the top for my favorite new musical too, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely both enjoy it more than Kimberly Akimbo and Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Several years ago, like when we went to the first Tony Awards, I really thought that the more shows I would watch, the more that I would agree with critics. But I think the more shows I watch, the less I agree with critics, because I have no idea what they're talking about and like why this show wasn't nominated for more shit, because it's so good.
I mean, I think like most of the critics actually did like the show a lot. It was just like fucking Jesse Green in the New York Times.
The general consensus is still congregating around Kimberly and Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Like people don't hate this, but they just don't think it's like anything special. And I think it's so good.
That's true. I had sent you this excerpt where Jesse Green was like, for more than 2 hours, it pelts you with piffle so egregious, not just puns, but also dad jokes, double entendres, and booby-trapped one-liners that, forced into submission, you eventually give in. So first of all, he's like, and Juliet, where he's like, yes, I like this, but I don't want to say I like this. But then when I told you this line, you were like, I can't believe Jesse Green's complaining about dad jokes. He basically is a dad joke.
I'm mad that Andrew Duran didn't get a nomination.
I definitely would have picked him over Peanut.
So the nominations are out by now, so we can't really try to predict that. I don't really know if this has a great shot in most of the categories that it was nominated in.
Like, I am a little bit hoping that it pulls out like a secret win for book or something.
That's what I was thinking. Do you think And Juliet would be the other front runner, or who?
Well, I think Kimberly Akimbo, just because people like it so much.
Like it's going to sweep everything.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, I would love it if this won for book. I think Alex Newell is probably their next best shot. And I'd say Alex Newell probably stands a pretty good chance of winning.
Yeah.
Because it's Justin Cooley from Kimberly Akimbo, Kevin Cahoon, who played Peanut in Shucked, Kevin Dell'Aguila, the poor little millionaire from Some Like It Hot, and Jordan Donica from Camelot, which we haven't seen. I have heard he's good, but I feel like there's just been a lot of hype around Alex Newell also.
Do you think there's any chance it'll get score?
I think there's a shot, but I think that one Kimberly Akimbo is more likely to get.
It's just like, I'm okay with Kimberly winning Best Musical, but I feel like the score is objectively not as good as this one.
I would love to be surprised by these awards. Okay, I did feel pretty strongly about Anne Juliet and liking that one. But Shucked is just like, I feel strongly about that in a different way because it truly feels like an underdog. Like Anne Juliet, everyone knew from the get-go that it was going to be good. But like Shucked, like no one really knew what was going on. Everyone kind of doubted it because they're like, oh, well, it's just like the Korn musical. But they did some like really great marketing and you know, and it was actually a good show. So I'm like truly, really rooting for Shucked.
We keep saying this about stuff because last week we were all so like, we knew nothing about New York, New York before it, like, because it didn't do any like trials out of town or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like the Flying Over Sunset. But this one was also basically like the Flying Over Sunset. Like I just saw a bunch of ads and I was like, okay. And then we were waiting in line, getting our purses checked. And all of these ushers were just walking up and down the street screaming at us, have the best Shuck of your life. And we're just like, okay, guess we're doing this. And then we saw this great show.
Yeah, so that's where it diverges from the Flying Over Sunset experience. All right. So that is our episode for Shucked. And next week, we'll be back with A Beautiful Noise, which will be our last show episode for the season. So to follow along with that, you can follow us on whatever podcast player you're using to play this and subscribe to us there. You can also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at BottomlessBway or get in touch with us at our email at BottomlessBway@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. Too much and too often we ain't started.